and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy and Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Along with this month's tape, summary and outline, and customer response card, you will also find another flyer on Grandy & Associates' newest tape series called Tech Talk. Tech Talk is strictly for technicians and will come out every other month beginning in January 1997. Each tape will cover customer relations, customer service, and add-on sales, everything except technical information. If you become a charter member by ordering your tapes prior to January 31st, 1997, you will also receive a free tape album to store your tapes in. Isn't it worth $99.95 a year to train your technicians? This month's tape is presented by Bob Nelson. As a vice president of Blanchard Training and Development Incorporated, Bob does keynote speeches, training, and consulting for organizations, associations, and conferences around the world on how to best motivate today's employees. He is author of 14 books on business and management, including 1001 Ways to Reward Employees. Bob is a PhD candidate in management at the Peter F. Drucker Graduate Management Center of the Claremont Graduate School in suburban Los Angeles. He holds a master's degree in business administration from the University of California at Berkeley with an emphasis in organizational behavior. Today, Bob is going to draw from his many years of experience to give us lots of simple ways to motivate and reward our employees.
If you had a magic switch, a switch you could turn on, and not unlike the switch in a room that turns on the lights, and with turning that on, you could cast a feeling over all your employees and your workplace that had everyone just really excited about doing the best job each and every day. And I mean the type of excitement where people are coming to work saying, "Thank God it's Monday. I'm ready to dig in, ready to do what's asked of me, to go above and beyond what's asked of me, to help the customer, to help the company, to save money." Is there any doubt in your mind that you would use such a switch to get from the best from your people on a day-to-day basis? I find that that switch is readily available to every business owner and manager today if they choose to use it. And that's the switch of positive reinforcement. I've written a book called 1001 Ways to Reward Employees, and in it, it combines my some knowledge and experience both as a manager myself, as a researcher on the topic of management, and from having worked in a variety of organizations with some excellent managers over the years. And what I've found is, and what I hope to convince you in the next 45 minutes, is that the power of positive reinforcement to catch people doing something right is very powerful, almost to be proven as a proven fact in all the management theories that are available. This is the one that's closest to being truth that I've ever seen and experienced as an employee and as a manager. And I want, in the next 45 minutes, for you to understand its power and how to harness it for your own employees. Now, as a consumer and a homeowner, when I go to use Workmen for a variety of purposes, it can be from cleaning my rugs to plumbing to roofing repair. There's always seems to be something that needs to be done. And as a homeowner, I find there's just three things that I expect of them. One, I want workmen to come when they say they're going to come. I like them to do what they say they're going to do. And I like them, third, to clean up after themselves. And to tell you the truth, I bet you I have at most one out of 20 or 30 workmen in my experience that have ever done that. If we were to take those behaviors and to, just as an example, to say, we want to get all of our employees to do those three things, not when they feel like it, not when it's convenient, but each and every day. I think it's very doable to get that type of performance from every worker on a daily basis. And I think it's a function, more than anything else, of what you do to set up that performance before it occurs and to follow up afterwards. We call that the ABCs of management. A is for activators, what you do beforehand, primarily in goal setting. B is the behavior you want, the desired behavior and performance, and C is the consequences, what you do after the desired behavior performance. What we know from management literature and research today is that to get the behavior you want from individuals, more than anything else, is a function of what you do before the behavior and what you do after the behavior. Goal setting is critical. Everyone in your organization needs to know why you're in business, what the vision for the business is, and as specifically as you can, what you want from them. So if it's an item such as customer service, if you can imagine how you specifically want them to interact with customers, how courteous they are, how prompt they are, that type of thing, as clear as you can get it, the better, the more likely you are to set up that type of behavior. Because once you have it clear what you want, then you can communicate that expectation and ask that they do it, give them training if necessary, that type of thing. Let me give you another example from the banking industry. We were working with the bank, and they wanted, they were convinced that if their tellers were friendlier, this would be a boon for their business. And they said, the problem is, how can you train a teller to be friendly? And we said, well, give us a try. And we set up a simple experiment in the lobby of the bank where we talked to customers for an afternoon. And we found out in short order there were three specific variables that accounted for if a teller was deemed to be friendly or not on the part of customers. And they were, number one, in this instance, was the person smiling? Number two, did they use, when they had it, the customer's name? Now, a teller ideally would know the customer's name, but if they didn't, if they can get it from their check or when they look up their account on the computer, as soon as they had the person's name, did they use it? And number three, did they engage in some type of conversation off the transaction, the business transaction at hand? If the tellers would do that, the customer in each and every case would view that teller as being a friendly person, and in the bank's judgment, if they had friendly tellers, they would have a better business opportunity and a broader business base, which I believe was true, could easily be fulfilled. The same is true in your business. As you get clear on what you want from employees, state that as the intended goals and then help them support that. Now, more importantly than goal setting, however, is, strangely enough, what you do after behavior. And I call that recognition or rewards, or consequences that you provide when the behavior occurs. Now, there's three types of consequences that any type of behavior can have in any organization or working environment. Number one, you can have positive consequences. And that's the type of thing that I have filled in my book. It's called 1001 Ways to Reward Employees, but actually there's about 2,400 real-life examples of positive examples from managers in all size companies across the U.S. and abroad. And that can range from a simple comment on up to pay and promotions, opportunities, flexibility in working schedule, independence of operation, autonomy, involvement in decision making. There's a lot of forms of reinforcement that are positive to employees today. Number two, you can have negative consequences. And we all know what those are. That can be from being reprimanded or yelled at or criticized or having a customer complain about your work, on through to a more formal demerit, demotion, a docking of pay, that type of thing, and everything in between. Or you can have no consequences, no feedback one way or another about the work that the person's been doing. Of those three possibilities, which do you think occurs the most frequently in work environments today? Well, if you guessed no consequence, you guessed correctly. Most employees come to work day in and day out, and they don't get any feedback as to how they're doing. Now, I'm convinced most everyone wants to be magnificent, wants to do a good job. But if they don't get any feedback on that regard, after a while, they start to wonder if they are. And if the only feedback they do get, which is often the case, is negative feedback from their manager when they make a mistake, it becomes detrimental to their performance. And that's the combination we most see, is no feedback at all combined with a negative feedback, criticism, correction, reprimand when the person makes a mistake. We see this so frequently in business today that we've actually labeled this as a style of management. We call it leave-alone zap. The most prominent style of managing people across this country today is to leave them alone until they make a mistake and then to zap them. As a result, what you get is people that start a job wanting to do their best job possible, but the only time they have interactions with their manager is when they're criticized. And for that reason, their attention wanes from doing the best job possible, wanes from serving the customer, and becomes more and more myopic, focused on the person's manager and the demands and expectations that that person has. The job becomes secondary. The customer service becomes lost. The customer becomes lost as they find another place that's better to do business with. An advanced form of that that some of you might have seen is we call seagull management. And that's the type of manager that flies in, makes a lot of noise, craps on everyone, and flies out. Another popular style of managing today. The sad part about it all is that by far the most powerful of the three consequences between negative, no, and positive, by far is positive consequences. If you use positive consequences, there's no greater, faster, more efficient way you'll get the desired performance and behavior than you want than through the use of positive consequences than anything else you could possibly do as a manager or business owner. Yet, ironically enough, that's used the least in business today. In fact, this has even been quantified in a ratio in the last studies done at Ohio State University, in a ratio of 4-1, that a positive consequence has 4 times the power of a negative consequence in achieving the desired behavior you want from others. This is true not just in the work environment and workplace, but it's also true if you have kids or with your spouse or in the classroom or on the playing field. This is a fundamental of human nature, and one that whose power, as I've said, is rarely harnessed to its potential in the workplace today. Let me give you some examples. And again, I've got so many. I want to share just a couple favorites that are used throughout the book. And one that was done at, there was a technical manager that, there was a technician that was working at Hewlett-Packard, and was working on a tough problem for a couple weeks, and one day he burst into his manager's office and said, "You won't believe it, I fixed the problem." His manager, knowing the importance of the timely recognition of a significant achievement, wanted to do something then and there to acknowledge the person. Literally groped around on his desk and ended up handing the guy a banana from his lunch with the words, "Great job, keep it up." Now, I'm not sure what you'd feel like if someone you worked with handed you a banana one day and said, "Great job you're doing," but this guy had some fun with it. He showed it to all his colleagues, what the banana the boss gave him, and it took on a story and a special meaning. Today at Hewlett-Packard, I'm told that the most prestigious award for technical achievement is known as the Golden Banana Award, all stemming from that simple example many years prior. At the Office of Personnel Management in Washington, D.C., they've got what they call the Wing Spread Award. It's a beautiful trophy of an eagle in flight that they give to a top achiever. A few years back, they gave it to an achiever who had it for this trophy for a couple days and went to his manager and said, "You know, I appreciate getting this trophy. I've certainly worked hard to get the achievement that it signifies here. At the same time, I feel a little bit guilty because so many other people have helped me achieve what I have in the organization. That what I decided I'd like to do, with your permission, is to pass this trophy on to someone else." His manager said, you know what? It's your trophy. You can do whatever you want with it. And so he did, thereby starting what's known as a pass-around award, a very simple concept that can be implemented in any work environment. This trophy, several years later, is still being passed around in that division of the federal government. The entire program's got two rules to it. One, if you get the trophy, you can keep it for as long as you want. Two, when you decide there's someone that you want to put in the spotlight, someone you want to acknowledge for their performance, and it could be kind of a steady state service or one time they brought in a new account type thing, you just say the word, they pull everyone together, have an informal meeting, and you announce who's getting the trophy and why. They have a standing ovation for that employee, and I tell you couldn't have a more heartfelt recognition. Peer-to-peer based recognition. In fact, it doesn't even matter what it is you're passing around. There's a company, a software company in Northern California that actually went to a pawn shop and they bought the largest, ugliest bowling trophy they could find. I think they paid $8 for it. And they used that as their pass-around trophy to acknowledge a type of behavior that they feel is important. Again, this could be customer service. It could be on-time delivery. It could be saving the money, saving costs for the company, whatever is important for your own operation. And as they acknowledge that person first by giving it to them, the person is acknowledged again and again as other people pass by their desk and say, hey, you got the bowling trophy. What'd you do? And they get to tell their story again and again. At the same time, you're making that person feel very special. You're sending a message to other employees in the work environment that this is the type of behavior that gets noticed around here. This is the type of behavior that's going to help the boat rise for everyone. And there serves a type of multiplier effect to get the awareness up and the behavior to follow about the type of performance that all will benefit from. Let me give you another example. At ARA Services, the food service company, they do kind of a fun thing. They do a lot of things, but one I think that's kind of cute is they have appreciation days for individual employees. And on that day, they'll send out a memo, and they'll name the person. Perhaps they'll have, like, Bob Jones Day for Bob Jones. And again, in the memo, they talk about what the person did of significance. And then on the day, they treat the person like a king or queen. Exactly who does the treating is left up to the person's immediate work group. Because what we know from motivation is that what motivates us is often the things from those people we personally know and work with, starting with our manager. So for that reason, no two forms of recognition are ever the same in that work environment. One employee might have, owner of the company come in, or the department head, personally chauffeur him to work on his day. They might have a potluck set up or a celebration as he comes in the front door with his name spelled out in balloons. Another group might say the person be a little bit shyer and say instead they might call the person's spouse and say, let's find out what hobbies or interests Bob Jones has and find out maybe he's into car repair. And so we'll buy something, a tool that he needs that they find out from his spouse about, chip in and get him something like that, a thoughtful gift that will have a lot of meaning. Another group entirely might spend the whole evening the day before they go home to booby trap his computer, to set a screensaver that he can't get rid of with some embarrassing information about his life, just to have some fun that way. The number of possibilities is almost endless. The result is the same. That if you take time to thank people, to specify what they did well, and give them that feedback, you'll get the results. And the results are awesome. Everyone wants and needs to feel appreciated, and yet so few people have it today. The results are widespread, from improvements in morale, and people that feel better about themselves tend to be more productive. When you channel that productivity towards specific goals, the competitiveness of your firm increases, and with it, the revenue and profit directly follows. It also is useful. The benefits of recognition can help reduce stress. So if in your workplace there's a lot of stress, or certain times of the month are more stressful, I've found from my experience that the use of recognition serves as a release valve to make working in your organization a little bit more fun, a little bit less stressful, even to the point where that stress can become channeled into a positive resource. Let me give you an example from my own experience. In my company, I've got several employees that work for me that customize products for customers. I couldn't do the job that these people do. On a daily basis, they're customizing 65 to 70 different projects and products for our clients, each with a different budget, with different time requirements, each with a whole series of unique demands. There's no way I could handle that type of complexity and stress on a daily basis. And yet I've never, ever found this group to complain. There's two or three employees that work in this environment that instead a big job comes in and I find them laughing, I find them joking, getting on the phone to line up resources, challenging each other as to how they can get the job done. And the reason is because we've set up a positive working environment where they are anxious to do a good job and to get the results, to have the opportunity to get the results that we all want. Now, what we also know about stressful environments is that they tend to have higher absenteeism. And so the use of recognition can help reduce absenteeism and with it turnover. For a lot of organizations, they have a problem with turnover. This can have a direct result and impact on that. In fact, in one recent study done last year by Robert Half and Associates, a nationwide recruitment firm, they found the number one reason why people are leaving jobs today is because of a lack of praise and recognition. This is above compensation, above personality conflicts, above career opportunity. The main reason people are leaving their jobs today is because they don't feel valued and appreciated in the work they're doing. And with the lowering of absenteeism and turnover, of course, you would have with it a decrease in the cost and time related to the constant hiring and training of new people. There's a lot of benefits to doing this. And more than ever before, I think it's a time in which American business of all sizes is faced with the need to have this type of increased behavior and focus from each and every employee each and every day. Overall, though, I'd say that if you didn't do this because it made people feel good and appreciated, which is a good thing, it made you feel good to do it, you should do it because there's a big bottom line impact on using recognition. If you're trying to grow your organization, trying to get enhanced sales, enhanced revenues, I find a very direct way to do that is through the systematic use of positive reinforcement. Let me give you some examples there. Again, these are all examples from the book. Pegasus Personal Fitness Centers out of Dallas, they did a fun thing where when employees started, they on their first day of work, they asked them to make a list of items that they would find motivating. And many of them didn't have a cost at all. So someone would list ball game tickets or some time off or lunch with the boss. And I think they used a range up to $25. Now, the second day of work, the employee often had completely forgotten they even made the list. But now the manager had essentially a motivation checklist to reinforce desired performance when they got it from that person. So a couple months went by, the person would bring in a new account. Hey, here's a couple ball game tickets. An employee often would be surprised and say, how did you know that I was into baseball? And the manager could say, well, you know, you told me. I find a lot of what I'm trying to do is to take the mystery out of motivation and show managers and business owners how they can align desired rewards and recognition with the desired performance and behavior they want from employees. Again, of companies of all sizes, as they harness the power of this technique, of this theory, they're finding ever-increasing amount of employee energy and initiative comes back to them as a result. I'd like to share with you a couple other quick studies and then turn our attention to, again, how you can put these principles in practice in your own work environment today. In a kind of a fundamental research that was done at the late 40s. There was a Dr. Lawrence Lindahl. He went to a number of managers, and he made a list of items, and he asked them to rank order them in terms of what he thought was most important to his employees. He listed full appreciation for work done, good wages, good working conditions, interesting work, job security, promotion and growth opportunities, personal loyalty to workers, filling in on things, sympathetic help on personal problems, and tactful disciplining. I'm not sure where he got this list, but he asked the managers if they could rank order them from the most important to the least important, what they thought their employees most wanted from work. And they said, they got the responses back, and kind of predictably, they said the most important thing to their people was good wages. Number two, job security. Number three, promotion and growth opportunities. That seemed to make sense. We say that it had good face validity. And he could have all things that had a tangible assets, tangible incentives, each with the financial cost, seemed to be predictable. And he could have packed up and gone home. But Dr. Lindahl said, wouldn't it be interesting if we can ask the employees that work directly for those managers? And we know they're going to say that the most important thing to them is money, followed by job security and promotion and growth opportunities. And we're going to say, that's what we thought. And we can go about trying to get them more of that. Funny thing happened, though, is that when he did ask those employees, he got a very different response. Employees ranked as the most important thing to them in the workplace was full appreciation for work done. They ranked secondly, feeling in on things. And we can talk about what that means. To me, it means having information to do one's job, knowing what's going on, knowing where the organization's going. Being able to get questions answered, being involved in decisions, especially as they affect you, are some aspects. And number three, they rank sympathetic help on personal problems, which I think is a fancy way of saying listening. People want and need to work for managers and owners that are willing to take the time to listen to them when they need to talk, not when their manager happens to have time. And although I've never yet worked in or seen an organization that didn't have a quote-unquote open-door policy, what I'm finding today is that most employees, when they go to their manager's office to talk to them, the person's on the phone, they're in a conference, they're on email, they're talking to a customer, and the employee comes back later, they come back a third time, and then they stop coming back. Because it's not a matter of what you say is important. What's really important is, are you actually making the time to meet with employees when they need to meet? As Roy Moody of Moody & Associates once said, the greatest motivational act one person can do to another is to listen. Oftentimes, in the speed of work today, we forget about how simply it is to truly be motivating and be there for other employees. Now, going back to what the employees picked, full appreciation for work done, filling in on things, and listening, that represents the other end of the spectrum. Ironically, all items that have little or no financial cost at all, but just require a little time, a little thoughtfulness, and a commitment on the part of their manager or business owner to make sure they make it happen. This gap in the literature has persisted to this day. This study, per se, was repeated in 1980, and as part of my doctoral work on this topic, I repeated in the early 90s, and have found that although there were other items that came up in the top 10, still the top things remain on top. That managers think people just work for money, and that employees, although money may be important, there's other things that tend to be more important once they're able to make their basic bill payments and live a standard of living to which they've been accustomed. Now, in a more recent study done by the National Study of the Families and Work Institute called the National Study of the Changing Workforce, they had an open-ended survey as to why employees took the jobs they did today. Hundreds of items were listed on this. The top, number one, was open communication in the workplace. People want to work in a place where they are treated with a sense of respect and trust, where they get the information they need, they get information that's asked for, that when they make a suggestion, they're not shot down and told that we tried that 2 years ago, it'll never work. But instead, they're given a consideration and a relevancy to their ideas on a daily basis. All the items in the top 10 came from what I call the softer side of management. In fact, people wonder, well, where did money come out on the study 16th? What the job actually paid was 16th in importance. And actually, that was two places above. They couldn't find another job. So it's not to say that money isn't important. It certainly is. It's not to say money doesn't have motivational value. It certainly does. And that value will vary for each of us over the course of our career. It is to say, however, that money is not considered a top motivator. For most managers, this is a surprising element. And if you're a manager that feels that people are only working for money, let me tell you, you will never get the fullest potential from your employees if you think the only reason they're there is for the number on their paycheck. It'll be like trying to get the job done with your hands tied behind your back. You will never, ever tap into the full potential and initiative that each and every one of your employees have to offer. Let me give you a final study, and then let's turn to talking about how to make this all happen. In a study done by Dr. Gerald Graham at Wichita State University a couple years back, he looked at the 65 potential incentives in the work environment all over the place, from salary and promotions down to simple tasks, simple items, plaques, that type of thing, everything in between. And these are the top five motivators that he found employees reported as being most motivating to them today. Number one was a personal thank you from their manager for doing a good job. A personal thank you from their manager for doing a good job, something that could be done in about 10 seconds. He asked employees that ranked this number one, he asked everyone, well, how often did they get these incentives? He found 58% of employees said they seldom, if ever, got a personal thank you from their manager, although they ranked that as the most motivating incentive that could happen to them. I'm always saddened by it when I report this because, again, it's such a simple thing to have happen, yet it's so rarely done. It always reminds me of the old Norwegian couple that was married for 50 years, and on their 50th wedding anniversary, Edna turns to Olaf and says, Olaf, you never tell me you love me. Olaf immediately shoots back, Edna, I told you the day we were married I love you. If I ever change my mind, you'll be the first to know. I feel so many managers look at it the same way. They assume, they want their employees and expect their employees to assume they're doing an excellent job unless they hear otherwise. And for most employees, that just doesn't cut it. They need to hear more often. They need to have the external validation of the internal effort they've been giving your company every day of work. Now, number two is not that different. A written thank you for performance from one's manager based on doing a good job. 76% of employees said they never received that where they work today. They never give a formal letter to their personnel file or a written note on a thank you card or the back of a business card or a post-it on their desk from their manager, from their owner. And with that, they never get the pride of being able to share that with their family or to save and reread it or to post it next to their workstation or to carry it with them and post it in their car. They never tap into that potential. In fact, I had an interview with Entrepreneur Magazine a couple of months back, and the reporter said, you know, I got to tell you this. I got to tell you, you know, I used to work for ARCO a number of years ago. I worked there for 8 years. In all that time I worked there, I couldn't tell you what I made, what they paid me. In fact, I got raises, I got merit increases. I don't remember any of them. The amounts, the timing. But one time my manager wrote great job on the top of a report I did. I've still got that piece of paper today. And I find this is not uncommon as I go around the country talking to people. I was in Syracuse, New York earlier this week and doing a radio show, and we had call-in listeners, and this woman called in and said, the best manager I ever had in my life, he used to write me notes and thank me when I did a great job. And I asked her, how long ago was that? She goes, oh, it's been 13, 14 years since I've worked for him. I said, do you have any of those notes still? I've got every one, she said. And what did you do with those notes? She saves them in a file, and she reads the file when she has questions or doubts about her worth, even though they're not even from her own employer or in her own company anymore. And that has a profound effect on her ability to get her job done today, even though it came from a different manager many years earlier. It's not uncommon to find that with employees in every work environment across the country. Now, number three is a little tougher for an individual manager and owner to impact. He found promotion based on performance, which I'd consider a more traditional incentive, to be number third on the list. And for most of us, we can't control the opportunities that arise in the workplace. But what I find every owner, every manager can impact is helping people get ready for opportunities that might arise. So there's a big movement in this country today away from guaranteed employment towards guaranteed employability. So you may not be able to guarantee someone a job or a promotion after a certain amount of time, but you can guarantee them that if they work hard for you, that you'll see that they have the opportunity to learn skills that will make them more marketable, either with your organization as it grows or elsewhere if they should leave or should be asked to leave, skills that they can take with them the rest of their life. 78% said they never received that where they work. Now, the last two of these five also had very little cost associated. Number four was public praise. In general, you want to praise publicly, reprimand privately. Oftentimes, I find we do the exact opposite. That when someone does a good job, we go, "Well, I should probably mention something to them. I heard back from the customer. I should probably let them know." And then we forget. And then when we finally remember next week, it seems too late, and we let it go. But have that same customer call and complain about a worker, and you page the person. Interrupt them in a meeting, and you get right down to it to find out why they did what they did. And again, we're back to the leave alone sap. We're quick to act on bad news, to criticize employees. We're very slow and hesitant to give them praisings and to thank them for doing a good job. In fact, in some work environments, I find that what they're really trying to do is they'd love to have more praises, but they'd be happier with having less public criticism. For example, I was working in a hospital in Phoenix, Scottsdale Memorial Hospital. And they said, "Bob, we would love to have more praisings, but we have a real problem with public criticism. We have doctors that criticize nurses in front of other colleagues and the patients, and it really takes a toll on morale." And what they decide to do there, and you see what you think of this idea, as in most hospitals, they have what's called a code blue. When someone's in cardiac arrest and over the intercom, they call the code blue, and people rush to that person and help revive their life. They started using a code pink. And if someone is reprimanding someone else in a public setting over the intercom, you hear, "Code pink, station 7. And everyone rushes to that spot on the floor and surrounds the two people and stares at the perpetrator, who typically a doctor in mid-sentence realizes that what he's doing is inappropriate and stops talking and says, "Well, we'll discuss this in another time." And what they found that really helped to curtail negative criticism that was used publicly in front of others. And they had an advanced form. They had a task force that if someone was a repeat offender, they'd call on them in their office and say, "You know, we've been staring at you a lot lately. We think you're better than this. How can we help you?" And from a nurturing, positive way, try to help that person offer a more appropriate behavior in a way that can make more of a difference in that work setting. 81% said they never got public praise where they worked. There wasn't a hall of fame. There weren't pictures of high achievers in the lobby or in the hallways. There wasn't a newsletter to share success stories with customers or turnaround stories. There wasn't any of that going on. And staff means employees weren't called out. Letters from customers weren't read at company meetings. And as easy as it is to do some of this stuff, none of it was going on in most of those work environments. And finally, number five, morale building meetings. was ranked fifth in importance for employees. Now, again, morale building means is taking time to stop and collectively smell the roses around some type of milestone or success. It could be having a record-breaking day. It could be being ahead of revenues for the month or the quarter. It could be an exceptional story that an employee did, a customer service story, could be around tremendous process improvements or cost-saving ideas that employees had. But finding some way to collectively put a bookmark in the hectic workaday world to say, hey, we achieved this goal and we did good. We installed the new computer system, and we're going to take time and have a beer at the end of the day and talk about how we ran two systems for several months and how hectic that was. And we're going to have the people that did the work share the stories, and we're going to celebrate. I find that if you don't do that with employees today, more than ever before, given the number of initiatives and change we've got going on, that you end up burning people out. And they were there for the last initiative, they were there and they gave it all they got. If the only thanks they get for doing a great project is they've got two more right behind it, that's no reward at all. And they end up instead just bringing to the next job, the next customer, the next project, a little less energy, a little less initiative, until one day they're coming to work just for the paycheck and they're doing what they're really excited about on the weekends. And when that day happens, your organization is already on the way out towards being out of business because it's rusting out from the inside. 92% of employees say they never take time to celebrate successes of the organization, the department, or individuals in it, someone finishing a degree, a birth in the family, things like that. And although it could be as easy as bringing in donuts it can be more elaborate, such as during stressful times, I brought in a masseuse to give my employees neck and shoulder massages, or Ben and Jerry's ice cream, or it can be a barbecue celebration with spouses or with upper management. There's just so many, many variations, and yet so little of this is done. Now, of those top five, Dr. Graham looked at, tried to identify what they had in common. And I think this is great news for all of us, because he found, number one, the most motivating incentives for employees today are manager-initiated, first and foremost, and second, based on performance. Manager-initiated. Motivation works best when it comes from those people we know closely, starting with our manager, and based on performance. People don't want handouts. They hate favoritism. They're uncomfortable with entitlements. They want to be acknowledged for doing the job they signed up to do, or for going above and beyond what was requested of them to act in the organization's best interest. And when you do that, you will have people on the edge of their seats wanting to do a better job for you, because they'll be in an environment where they feel appreciated and want to give you the best because they feel they're gaining that from you. His conclusion, and I'll conclude with our research with this as well, is that it appears that techniques that have the greatest motivational impact are practiced the least, even though they are easier and less expensive to use. The things that are most powerful, the easiest to do, are also the less expensive and are done the least. As my boss, Ken Blanchard, likes to say, catch people doing things right. You'll see a big result when you do that. Now, as simple as this is, why don't more managers do it? And I think more than anything else is I think a lot of managers know about the importance of this, and they've gotten away from it. They forgot it. There's a lot of reasons why people don't do it. They're too busy, that type of thing. They're afraid that if they do this, people are going to ask for more money. And I find, for the most part, all those reasons are pretty much like excuses. And the reality of it is that they're not true. That employees really do want this. They will value it if you take time to do it. And I'm reminded of the general who was with the colonel going into to battle, and about the importance of leading with your own example of doing this yourself. If you want it in your organization, you've got to practice it as well. And this general was getting ready to lead the command, the troops into battle, and he turned to his orderly and he said, bring me my red vest. And the colonel said, General, what are you doing? Don't you know if you wear your red vest, you'll be an obvious target for the enemy? And the general looked at the colonel and said, it's leaders, the greatest leaders, that lead by example. The reason I wear my red vest into battle when I lead the charge is in case I'm hit by the enemy, that my men won't see that I'm wounded and bleeding and will continue the fight even in my absence. And the colonel looked back a bit taken back and said, turned to his orderly and said, bring me my brown pants. I find that today that leaders have got to wear the red vest over the brown pants, and they've got to practice this behavior from the top to get the feeling, to get the behavior throughout the organization. And as an owner of a company, as a manager, you have a wonderful opportunity to make a difference with your employees by simply starting on a personal level of catching them doing things right and doing that in as many ways as possible on a daily basis to systematically reinforce the behavior that's most important to your success and that of your organization. If you do that, I've learned if you give people praisings, if there's one place to start with giving people systematic feedback on performance. Feedback is a breakfast of champions, we like to say. And if you do it as soon as possible, as you see them doing something correctly or you hear about it from a customer, do it sincerely. It's got to come from the heart. You'll never get the best from employees by building a fire under them. You've got to build a fire within them to get the results you want. You need to be specific about what exactly you liked about the performance, the behavior. It needs to be done personally as much as possible, or next best thing through a note or that type of thing. Keep it 100% positive. Don't give someone a praising and then immediately take it away. And then finally, be proactive. Once you've set up goals, you need to proactively follow up with catching people doing things right to reinforce that desired behavior. If you don't do that, if you don't do it with intentionality, you will end up being reactive instead, and you'll be reactive about the mistakes people make and miss opportunities to reinforce the behavior. In general, you want to, in practice, this comes down to you saying you saw what the person did, you appreciate it, here's why it's important. And if you want to get to really leave a mark, tell them, here's how it makes me feel. And at that emotional level, you'll leave something lasting with an employee, something they'll share with their spouse and their family and carry with them for some time to come. Mark Twain used to say, I could live for 2 weeks on a good compliment. And I'm convinced today, more than ever before, that 2 weeks could be 2 months or easily 2 years if you do it right. What I've tried to do in this tape is to share some ideas, some examples about the theory, the practice, the importance of using recognition with your employees today. And more than anything, I hope this is just a starting point for you, that you get a chance, if you haven't, to see my book, to find out more ways to have the discussion with your employees and to discuss this topic and see what they would find of value. And to not try to guess what they might find of importance, but to actually ask them and involve them in the process. If you do that, I think you will find you've discovered a magic switch. And in so doing, you will tap into a new energy that you and perhaps your employees didn't realize was available to take advantage of. And in conclusion, I just would like to say that if you always do what you always done, you'll always get what you always got. So there's just a single idea that you picked up here that you can put into practice. The real test of that is going to be to actually put it into practice.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. As a reminder, our three-day basic business boot camp continues to help contractors learn how to run profitable businesses. For more information on our ProfitMax software and or our three-day basic business boot camps, simply call or write Grandy & Associates or check us out on the web. The address is www.grandyassociates.com. The address is the same as in the past, but the website has been totally redesigned in terms of its content. You can now order online, view boot camp locations, and even sign up for a class online. Take a look as you have time. It might just increase your bottom line profit a bit. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.